I would say my truth, but I would let it build up and build up to a point where it's explosive. But if you speak your truth, come from a place of love. That's the difference. It just makes it better when you come from a place of love.
83% of Americans identify as not very happy, which can hold you back and negatively affect your relationships and your business. On this podcast, we discuss the proven steps to happiness so you can restore balance and rekindle your joy.
Welcome to another episode of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. Excited as I always am, but today is super, super cool. I've got a former client, Ryan Polreis, on with us today. How are you, Ryan?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Brad.
Awesome, man. We're about as far apart as we can get, right, in the United States.
That's
I'm
right.
on the East Coast and you're on the West Coast.
That's right.
Awesome to have you. So months ago, you came to me, and when we first talked, you said, you know, Brad, I just want to be happier. You were kind of in a rut. And as we talked, as the time went on, we quickly found out that you really had this fear around judgment, right?
Right.
And that fear of judgment was causing you to almost be panic stricken before, during, and after public speaking. That fear of judgment, folks, that's the real reason that people have a fear of public speaking. So we're going to talk a lot about that today. But Ryan, just tell us about your experience kind of leading up to this and then going through the process. And we're going to have a great old chat today. So I'll let you take it away.
All right, cool. Thanks, Brad. Yeah, I think I got to a point where there was definitely a heavy incident that happened in my life. And I was the kind of person that always tries to fix things. And when I got to a point where I did everything I thought I could, I still wasn't happy. And I even tried the typical therapy. And while that was okay on some level, I don't feel any better. Like we talked, I had somebody to listen to me, but that was kind of the extent of it. And then when you and I met, you really like dig deep the whole process. You really have to pay attention and you're focused on you instead of always doing is focusing on everything else except me. And that was the big turning point for me. But your point about judgment, it's not something you just sit there and think about like, oh, I've got a fear of judgment. No, it was the whole process that really sort of highlighted that piece, which I never thought I had that. I knew I had a fear of public speaking. I hated public speaking. I could do it in my day job to the people that reported to me. And there's something weird about that where I don't know if it's a psychological thing where these people report to me, so they have to listen kind of thing, but anybody above or outward that I had to, and including my personal life. And that was the big one, I think, that I learned through this was while I had 1,000 people reporting to me when I was at Sony, and I'm not anymore to be clear, I had a lot of people reporting to me and I had to give difficult conversations. There was something different about that than actually having to do that with my family. And the problem is, when you don't have those conversations, things build up and build up, and then you explode, and not violently, but physically violently, but you explode. I can't do this anymore. You kind of flip out. And I think the judgment piece was huge for my personal life, as well as the public speaking outwardly to people.
Right. Awesome. So tell us about the public speaking. Tell us about what was it like leading up to it, during and after those public speaking events that you had?
Yeah, most recently, I started at a game studio in California, and we had these huge events. I've never had to pitch to investors or anything. And even my portion wasn't that long of the pitch. I basically started it out. And it was nerve-wracking, especially the 2 weeks leading up to it, because it was like, oh, 2 weeks is coming up and we're preparing for it. And even in one of the preparation sessions with just my little group, I started having that where I couldn't get my words out, where you can't breathe out. It's almost like you need to take a second to just breathe out because you kind of have that feeling where you just can't talk. And if you have that happen once, then you're always thinking about that one time that you did that. And then it freaks you out up to it. We actually started having the sessions. I think we were on week 2 or 3 in that process, leading up to it. And I even had a session with you while I was in the midst of this big conference, which is called GDC. But I think our big session was even all those sessions that you have where you're digging deep, journaling, all the stuff that you go through in the process. The big one with the hypnosis piece, which I have to admit, I was like, I don't know, man. Hypnosis. I was really surprised that how deep it went, because I had an amazing childhood and my adult life. Sure, I've had a lot of turmoil through your adult life because you don't have your parents there to protect you. But even then you're like, no, there's always something in shine, you know, no matter how much you have. And you would go deeper, go further back. And there's this one incident that happened when I was 5 that really, I think, was the impetus, because I never really had a fear of public speaking as a kid, but I think it really started that process of building up, because I did always want to please my parents, of course. But this one incident where I viewed them as disappointed in me. Do you want me to go into
this? Yeah, I definitely want to go into this, because I think it's really important to tell the story about going to the source. But before we go there, Ryan, so for the weeks leading up to these presentations that you had to give, what were you feeling and what was the story that you were telling yourself in your head?
Oh, it was massive anxiety leading up to it. You go through this process of how can I get out of this? What story can I tell to get out of this? Or is there some magic wand, magic solution to this? In the past, leading up to other things, looked into, you Google online, how can I do this? Or you find a book and it gives you all these sort of actions to do, but they don't really help. I mean, the one thing that actually does help the best is preparation. That you have to be prepared, bottom line. Definitely do that. But there's still that piece that those things don't really help.
So you've got this major anxiety. Let's just call it anxiety, stress, whatever. What are you actually scared about?
Well, it comes down to that judgment piece. It's like, yeah, you're not thinking about, oh, they're going to judge me. You're thinking about, what if I have a panic attack during it and I can't speak, and then I look like an idiot and they're never going to want to work with me and I'm going to screw it up for everybody else.
Yeah. Like, who hasn't been on stage? I can remember reading when I was like 22 at a good friend's wedding and I got up in front of the church. My knees were visibly like shaking. Thankfully, it was behind a podium. It was like 3 verses I was supposed to read. I skipped the middle one. I was so nervous. So then I would think, oh my God, if I have to public speak again, is this going to happen? All right. So leading up to this, you've got this terrible anxiety that, oh my gosh, am I going to have a full-blown panic attack during the actual presentation? I'm going to be stuck up there. I can't talk. Oh my God, I'm going to look like a fool. Is that fair?
Exactly. Yeah.
Then as you're like in the presentation, what's going on? Because I remember you telling me like there was times where you literally couldn't speak or breathe.
Yes. So actually, I would say the very first one I had, I was, of course, nervous because it was leading up to it. I didn't know what to expect going in. Like, is there's this big board of people? And what it really was is just normal, like anybody. They're normal people too. And you just start having a conversation with them. Then you go into the pitch and then you're on. You're the one that's on. And literally, I got to one point where I started feeling it. And then it just, something hit where it just kind of like, I paused for a sec and then it just, that buildup fear just went away. And it was just the first one. After that, I literally was excited for the rest of them. I couldn't wait to get into the next few because it was that, relax, don't worry about it. You're doing fine.
That was after you did the work.
That's right. Yeah.
So before we go there, before doing the work, you'd have this terrible couple of weeks leading up because you're afraid you were going to have this panic attack. You often got, or in the past, you got kind of stuck. And then after that, you would spend some period of time, like, didn't you tell me, worrying about what they thought about the presentation?
All right. Exactly. Yes. Thankfully, there was a lot of good feedback for the team. But I mean, the other guys were amazing as well. So, and it was really about what we were selling. It's, again, nothing about what you as a person are. It's really about, what did they think? You're kind of going through your mind. Did they see me breathing weird? That kind of stuff goes through your mind.
So how long did this go on for? Like, how long did you struggle with this fear of judgment or fear of public speaking?
As far as I can go back, it's probably been a good 10, 15 years. And again, it's not been the people that report to me at work. It's the other things. As far as like saying what I feel to family and just having a normal conversation, that's been forever.
So yeah, we'll have to talk about that too in a minute. I can relate to a lot of what you're saying because I was that guy for 47 years who was like, fear of judgment. I don't care what people think. All along, I really did care. But what I will say that's embarrassing to a point is that I would look at people that were technically lower than me, made less money or worked for me, and felt more confident. I'm better than them. And I would look at people who made more money than me and thought, oh my God, they're going to judge me. I'm not as good as them. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why you were able to talk more confidently, because your weak subconscious mind was just like, well, I'm not as good as a lot of these people, but these people are below me. So it gives me a little bit of relief. I don't know. I'm just, yeah, that's how I think it was for me.
That's a fair assessment. Yeah, absolutely.
So you mentioned this, but tell us a little bit more of over the 10 or 15 years, what did you try to remedy this?
Yeah, like I mentioned, I tried Googling ideas and reading books, and they just kind of hit surface levels of try this, try this, try this. And like I mentioned, the only one that really did anything was just preparation, of course, which you have to anyway for any sort of presentation. But anything else, it just doesn't get to the heart of what is causing this panic in you. Very surface level try. I can't even remember because they just didn't work. So I just like discounted them immediately.
Like, it's useless. It's very similar to a lot of issues, whether it's depression or anxiety, or in business, people love to talk about the word mindset. Oh, if you need to be better about calling on clients, just look in the mirror and just tell yourself blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But none of this stuff works because there are deeply seated beliefs in your subconscious mind that were formed during childhood that mm-hmm. absolutely dominate your behavior. 95% of your behavior is driven from your subconscious mind. So you can do all the affirmations in the world and read all the books. There's a client on my site who has this amazing testimonial, Ashley, that says, I did everything. I went to Tony Robbins and self-development for all these years, and I knew what I should have done, but I could never do it. And when we got to her subconscious mind and figured out why that happened, she was able to change anything. So now we're going to go to your story when you're 5 years old. But before we go there, here's what happens in hypnosis. And just like Ryan was skeptical, a lot of people are skeptical about hypnosis. But what it really is it's a deeply relaxed state so that you can kind of block out all the noise and focus right in on the subconscious mind that knows the source of your problems. So in the third week of my course, I put Ryan into, actually, I didn't put him into it. I can't put anyone into it. The person self-hypnotizes themselves. What I do is I just get them in a deeply relaxed state, walk him down some visual stairs, and he's deeply relaxed. And then I say to Ryan, bring me to a scene that has all to do with why you have this fear of judgment. And his brain took him to three scenes. This one scene is he's going to share with you is part of the source of this fear of judgment. So Ryan, if you want to go ahead and tell us about that, that'd be awesome.
Sure. Yeah. And again, my parents are amazing. I don't want them to put them on blast on a podcast. Yeah. But this one incident that I hadn't even thought of, and even you were like, have you even thought of this before? No, it wasn't even on my mind, but it just like through hypnosis, you go to that spot. And yeah, I was 5 years old. My parents were young. They had me when they were 20. So they were 25. I was 5. And the scene, because it's like a scene to me, I'm watching it. It was bedtime. I was in this maroon football jersey and underwear, and that was it. It was bedtime. And they were going some, I have no idea. I still need to talk to them. I was going to have a chat with them when we're like face to face next time I see them. But yeah, basically they were going somewhere and they said, do not leave the house. And if anybody knocks on the door, they have to say the magic word. So we had a magic word when they knocked on the door, and I wasn't supposed to leave. My sister was already in bed. She was 3. So they left, and I don't know how long after. All I can visualize is I open the door to look out for them, and the door closed behind me, and it automatically locked.
Oh.
And I think we were living in student housing at the time because my dad was in college. And I then, of course, was panicked because I couldn't get back in. And I'm like, oh, my God, I did exactly what they told me not to do. And I ended up upstairs. I must have walked up to the people upstairs, and I can still remember the kid's name that lived up there, Victor. And I remember just sitting there with the t-shirt jersey pulled over my knees, watching TV. And then they came in, and the lady must have wrote a note and stuck it on the door or something and said, hey, I've got your kid upstairs. And so in my mind as a kid, I'm thinking, oh, they're so disappointed. They come in and I see their faces. And as a kid, I'm seeing they're so disappointed in me. I did exactly what they told me not to do. And so from there, that's where that judgment initiated. Again, it didn't really take hold until a few other things, but that's how I viewed it. But as an adult, now seeing it through an eyes of a parent, especially, it was more of a, and can I say the SH word? But that's on your podcast. I was like, oh shit. Seeing it as a parent, that's what their faces were saying was, oh shit, this was really stupid to leave a 5-year-old to go wherever they went. But yeah, it's that one incident that I hadn't even given thought of ever until that session that we went through.
Yeah. So some powerful things that were said there. So Ryan did what all of us little boys do. Usually we do exactly the opposite of what we're told to do. And because of that, I think when they came home, there was a little bit of like, hey, you shouldn't have done this. You're in trouble, right? You get a little bit of chastising or whatever it was. Yeah. So what does a 5-year-old brain say? I did something wrong. They're upset with me. I've disappointed my parents. So I'm bad. I'm not good enough. So that's where this fear of judgment was born from. One of the incidents. It's never usually just one thing. It's usually a series of things. And we won't go into the other things today, but this was really powerful because listen, guys, this scene was dominating, or maybe not dominating, but was affecting Ryan's life in a negative way for 10 to 15 years. And he never knew about it. He could have gone to talk therapy for the rest of his life and it would have never come out. Why? Because it was buried in his subconscious. We don't ever forget things. Your memory actually starts in the third trimester. You can't recall them, but you remember everything. So we took him back to a time that had to do with why he has this fear of judgment. Was he beat? Was he put in a cage? Was he molested? No. A lot of people think like these big T traumas as opposed to this is a little T trauma. It doesn't do any good to say, well, nothing really bad happened. Something bad enough happened where his brain interpreted something a certain way. He would have lived with it for the rest of his life, but he did the work. So really, really powerful to think about. You've got symptoms and things going on in your life right now that are not serving you well. Whether it's you drink too much, you have a shitty marriage, you eat too much, you smoke too much weed, you have anxiety, depression, OCD, you have a sickness, all kinds of illnesses can be caused. And you don't know why, right? And some of us go to talk therapy over and over and over again, and we never really get to it because almost always the cause is your programming from childhood. And this is why it's so powerful to use hypnosis, because you can uncover those things. Because like you said, you never thought about that scene until we got you into a deeply relaxed state. Your subconscious mind always knows the source of your problems. It will go back to them almost every single time.
I told you, Brad, about this, but after our sessions, thought back, I had a recurring nightmare growing up with that same jersey on. Wow. Going to school, like, you know how everybody has that. I went to school naked, or I went to school, but it was always in that jersey. So I thought, I wonder if there's something there.
I've had that nightmare way too many times where I'm in school and I've got no clothes on. I'm like, what? Why is this happening again? So here are three components that are absolutely critical to changing a mental state. And when I say a mental state is you're paralyzed to speak in public, right? You have OCD, you have anxiety, you have depression. There's three critical things, in my opinion, that you need to change a state once and forever. The first is awareness of why it happened, why it is happening. So through hypnosis, we were able to figure out the scenes that caused Ryan's fear of judgment and terrible fear of public speaking. So that's number one. And that's why I think hypnosis is so amazing, because all change begins with awareness. The second, and as critical as the first, is the rewiring of the brain. So Ryan grew up believing, okay, I'm fearful of being judged because I'm bad or I'm not good enough. So we rewire it through neuroplasticity. And that is a recording that is made for Ryan, tailored to him, that he listens to for at least 30, maybe 60 days over and over again as he's going to sleep. And his brain is in an alpha wave brain state, which is where you're mostly susceptible to suggestion. So you've identified the problem, number one, so you can become aware of it and change. Number two is you rewired the brain. Number three, and again, just as important as the first two steps, is now that you know that, you've got to put this stuff into practice. So I have this daily emotional tracker that if you want to download, you can find it at bradchandler.com/tracker. And it's basically every time you feel a negative emotion, you're in a fight or flight state. I teach you how to process your emotions, and that's a whole nother episode, so we won't get into that, but very few of us were taught how to process our emotions. So in processing your emotions, you realize, okay, why am I nervous? I got to speak again. Oh, I'm nervous because my parents judged me, or at least I thought they did back then, but I'm not 5 years old anymore wearing a pajama jersey, right? I'm 40 or 50 or however old you are. And so therefore, I don't need to feel this way. And after doing that, you take this triggered state. Yours was 2 weeks. You go to 2 days. You go to 2 hours. You go to 2 minutes. I mean, most of my trigger states now are literally seconds. I run through that same thing. What's my thought? What was the emotion it created? Where did it come from? Is it true? It's not true. Okay, boom. I'm right back to my joyous state. So everyone can do that. So those three components are so critical. None of those involve drugs. None of those involve years of therapy. Those are really over a 5-week session. And then the practice can go, it might take you 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. I don't know. Have you found that emotional tracker piece in the processing of this to be helpful, Ryan?
Oh, absolutely. Another thing is when you don't really take the time to sit down and write out what's happened to you or what you're going through, how you're feeling, then you don't reflect on it. You don't get any better. I think it's a must. You have to take the time to do this. Absolutely.
So tell us now about, since you've done this work, I don't know if you've had one or two, or I think you've at least had one. How have things been different from the way they used to be in terms of your public speaking?
Well, I still, of course, get nervous, but then you go through the process of what you just laid out. I don't want to repeat it, but you go through that process again and you instantly get that calm. I still listen to your recording that you gave me in the mornings as well. And I don't have those fears. I get excited for presenting and listen to these ideas. And in fact, I think I mentioned to you that my day job has gone away, but that's more economics for that particular company. It's crazy though, because I now feel more confident and more excited because now I'm doing my own thing on a whole bunch of different levels because of those pitch process that I went through was a huge eye opener to just see all these companies or people with investors with money that want to invest in cool things. And it's really gotten me excited about working with other people, especially in the film industry, that we can try to raise money for our own projects and kind of do the things that we want to do instead of making money for other people, essentially. So it's kind of completely changed everything.
Yeah. We're going to talk about that in a second because it's really exciting stuff. But I wanted to say, if you're sitting here thinking, like 3 years ago, if I was on this podcast, man, sorry for him, but I don't really care if people judge me, but I really did. So I developed this 3-minute, 2-minute quiz. It's 12 questions that you can figure out if you really do care if people judge you and what your level of self-love is. So just go to bradchandler.com/love, take the quiz, see where you land. And if you land in mild or lack of self-love, know that your life and your relationships and your business and your health can profoundly change by doing the work that Ryan just did. So Ryan, before we get into kind of what cool things you're up to now, I wanted to say, I found this with myself and I found this with many clients is that you had the proverbial lion chasing you most of your life, right? Because you didn't know what invisible prison you were in from your childhood. And again, nothing was terrible in your childhood, but you didn't know what was affecting you. As soon as we kill, and that's one of my jobs, is killing that proverbial tiger that's chasing my clients, you can actually take a couple deep breaths and look around and be like, oh my gosh, what was I really meant to be? And I know your life's purpose, you're going to flourish in this because this is probably what you were always meant to do and be. So there's countless benefits of doing the work and going from lack of self-love to extreme self-love. This is one of them. It becomes very easy and clear to find your purpose. 47 years, I thought making money was my purpose. I woke up every day and I was like, I'm going to buy some more houses today. But I wasn't really ever excited about it. I wake up every day now to talk and deal and help people like you. And man, you can go look at my videos from years ago and now. I'm just a completely different person. I love this. I can't get enough of it. I study this stuff every single day. So it's just a beautiful thing when you find your life's purpose.
Absolutely. I think I've always taken the non-risk route. And I didn't know about money or anything, which is what I got into 10 years ago. But I took the non-risk route. I went to film school and I wanted to be a writer director. But instead, I just kind of fell into production, the easy route, what people would hire me for, and kind of just moved up the chain. Instead of becoming an artist, I took the easy route. And I think a lot of that has to do with things that hold you back. And yeah, like I said, your program just kind of opened me up to all these possibilities of like, what am I doing? I need to do this, this, and this. The ideas just start flowing and more confidence, essentially.
Love it. So let's talk about what things have changed at home, and then we'll close on the super cool things you're doing now. What has changed in terms of your conversation and your relationships at home?
Yeah, the big one was with my wife. She had a stroke 3 years ago, and we were living in Canada at the time. And I kind of went through basically 2 years of just redlining it, because I was now not only the breadwinner, but now caretaker of the kids, caretaker of her. I was completely redlining it. And then when I kind of came out of that, because she could start to do some things on her own, I ultimately found that she needed to want to get better. So it was really being able to have those difficult conversations with her and being able to speak, I think you say to speak your truth, being able to speak exactly how I was feeling with her. Literally my first talk with her, she started doing squats right after trying to get better and trying to physically get better. But we still have an open line, and I tell her everything that I'm feeling. And the kids are actually in Seattle with my parents this week and able to have a bit more conversations without them in the house. And we're just talking about, okay, next steps. Cause now she just got her driver's license recently.
Man.
And she just got a job. I lost my job. She's got a job now. So she's going to be working as a behavioral therapist for kids.
Oh my gosh, that is awesome.
Yeah. So, because she's wanting it now. And I told her that, like, I can't want it for you. This is up to you. And just having those real conversations, I think, has been huge.
Oh my gosh. I'm so proud of you, man. Unbelievable. And this all came from doing the work and feeling the confidence to speak your truth.
That's right. Yeah.
Isn't it just incredibly freeing and liberating to be able to like speak your truth and be your authentic self?
It is. And like I mentioned before, sure, I would say my truth, but I would let it build up and build up to a point where it's explosive, like this sucks and blah, 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 and nothing happens. But if you speak your truth, I think the big thing from you was come from a place of love. That's the difference. Because yes, even when I told, well, I shouldn't say this probably, but I told a previous boss, and maybe it's obvious now because it's recent, because I just went through your course recently, but I spoke my truth about their performance. I would have never done that in my life. And I came from a place of love. Hey, I'm saying this as a friend. This is what I think needs to happen. And I think across the board, it just makes it better when you come from a place of love and just say, I'm speaking as a friend. I love you. This is what I'm seeing, blah, blah, blah.
Man, so amazing. So if you guys are questioning your relationship isn't going well, has never gone well, or you've bounced around and you want to know the cause of the bad relationship, don't look to your spouse. Don't look to your partner. Go look in the mirror. The real problem is the relationship has with themselves. So Ryan did not have a great relationship with himself prior to doing this work. Now he has. And look how his marriage is changing before his eyes. It's unbelievable. So, dude, so great. And let's end on this. I know you're up to some really cool things with your new business. Tell us in a couple of minutes, like what you're up to and how people can reach out to you.
Yeah, thanks. I'm basically trying to get a community together right now. Initially, I set this business up, money-act.com, as selling a masterclass. And what I do is I pair money and movies together. So I went through a bankruptcy. You can see Life of Pi back there. We won the Academy Award for Best Visual Effects for Life of Pi, and then were bankrupt, same exact time. And it was at that point that I needed to learn about money. So I've been learning Austrian economics, Keynesian economics, history of money, all this stuff. And for the last 10 years, and came up with this program to pair money and movies to make the topic of money more fun for people. And especially for filmmakers and gamers, because we're all artists. We don't care about money. I mean, we care about money, but we don't care about, we just hand our money over to some sort of advisor and let them deal with it. Where this is, my tagline is putting you in the director's chair of your finances. So initially it was going to be, and it still is currently, a masterclass. You go through a three-act structure, how to budget like a Hollywood producer, how to invest like a Hollywood executive, and you go through this course. Well, now what I'm trying to do, especially from sort of the enlightenment after going through your process, is there's all these, of course, you go watch a movie, it's always a superhero movie or a sequel to something that was great 20, 40 years ago. And there's nothing really original unless it comes from the game industry now. And I'm thinking, and right now the writers are on strike. Writers Guild has basically shut Hollywood down. And so my idea is to create a community of filmmakers, gamers, or anyone who loves movies, money, to join this community. They get my masterclass for free right out of the gate so that everybody's speaking the same language. They can invest accordingly within this process, share ideas. Hey, I just found this fits this piece of the puzzle. And then we can all share those ideas. It'll be a Discord channel. I'll have another channel where I'm working with a producer that can help me create basically mini stock within an idea. So if the community can pitch each other film ideas or game ideas, and the community that can then invest as crowdfunding to the best ideas. And so we'll either crowdfund the whole project or crowdfund portions of the project to then get it to investors to do the pitching process, like I just did. So I'm really excited about it. We're still trying to hammer out the whole concept and then get it ready for prime time, hopefully end of this month. But it should be a lot of fun, a different way to invest for a lot of people, especially in something fun like movies and games.
Amazing. So when you said we went bankrupt, who is the we?
I was with a company called Rhythm and Hues for most of my adult life, early adult life, and that company went bankrupt. I was actually running the company, their branch of the company in Canada at the time, and the LA company went bankrupt, which meant we went bankrupt, and the company that purchased it out of bankruptcy, I stayed with them for about a year, but it was definitely that moment. I literally had that fear moment. Oh my God, it was after a string of bankruptcies and visual effects. I'm like, I gotta reinvent myself. I gotta come up with something different. And so that was kind of the impetus.
So guys, Ryan is a complete stud. He worked on Life of Pi. I mean, that movie was amazing. So if you want to reach out to him and see all these cool things he's up to, it's money-act.com. Ryan, in closing, is there anything that we didn't talk about that you've learned through the process or anything that you think would be helpful for listeners to know?
I think they should definitely go to your quiz. That's how I found you on another podcast and then took the quiz. And I would say if you have been struggling and nothing has been working on all the things we've talked about, whether it's public speaking or with your family, friends, your job, anything that has got you down, essentially, I think you should take Brad's quiz at least just to see what the outcome is and then work with him. It's been amazing. Huge change for my life.
Thank you, Ryan. I can't tell you how proud I am and grateful that I was able to take this journey with you. And man, you really just lit it up. So I cannot wait to see what the future holds for you. The quiz he mentioned and I've mentioned is at bradchandler.com/love. And that concludes another episode of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. If you like it, please share it, rate it, review it, anything you can do to help us spread this joy. We need a bunch of people for this movement. I can't do it alone. So if you want to also join our private Facebook group, just go to bradchandler.com/Facebook and join our How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs Facebook group. Till next time. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Love heals all.
Hit subscribe if you don't want to miss out on more life-changing content. And if you're struggling, you don't have to. Go to bradchandler.com/contact. There, you can join the Facebook community of like-minded entrepreneurs, and you'll see a button to schedule your freedom and happiness call. See you on the next episode.